This program is brought to you by PersonalLifeMedia.com.
Welcome to Business Success Tips, where you can
learn how to be more successful in business.
Hey, that's very boring. I mean, come on. We got a little more interesting than that. Give me a break. I'm choking over here.
That's so funny.
I was just
going to
see if Paul's looking at me for the answers.
Give us some exciting here. All right. So, Andreas is going to tell us how to delegate your business to somebody else who's 5,000 miles away, or whatever, 6,000 miles away.
So let's start with the whole driving factor behind you.
So you've built a business, but now you want to...
You built a business.
You want to get out, right?
But you don't want to close up shop. You want to keep making your money.
The money to keep coming in. So Andreas, wise one, how do you do it?
Thanks. So... before I started these, I would say, conversion with the business, I was like a hamster in a wheel. So I'm working. I was completely dependent on one or two clients. I'm selling myself for hours and all these things. And the first thing I did, I was listening to BST. So this was the best thing. And then I started with the self-improvement. What could I do better? Blah, blah, blah. Then I met Paul and then we started in this thing. So the first principle, what I've learned is a business is a business, but when it makes money, when you sleep. So it should be nothing, should have nothing to do with your work. So selling you hourly or selling people hourly. So I'm not at this stage where I'm completely independent from people, but with these residual things, I'm working on that. So it was a process how I could get out of the business, out of the daily business. And it took me, I think, 2 to 3 years. And last year, I think I was 8 months in the US here, and the business was doing pretty okay. So I had some phone calls, some email conversations.
It was manageable.
It was manageable, yeah. It was some disasters, but it was not essential. So everything was good. So I think the most important thing was I thought I had to do everything myself. If something's complicated or a customer's angry or whatever, okay, I have to call him, I have to drive, I have to stop by, I have to do everything. And if there's a complicated project, let me do it. So that's the safest, secure way, so nothing will happen. And then I had to step back and delegate stuff to the technicians. So I'm getting out of these daily technical work. So this was, I think, step number one. Step number two was to get out of these administrative work. So invoicing, checking delivery notes, and all these, okay, calling the guys, you have work, what's going on, blah, 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 blah. So I hired a person who's taking care of invoicing, who's a little bit checking the numbers and giving me direction. We developed a small...
Skimming a little off the top.
Yeah. So I just get a...
That was a joke.
It's good. It's not good. Okay.
Evidently it works in Germany.
So everybody except me is working there. So this was a good thing. The next thing is we developed a small software so I can get an idea about the amount of hours the guys are working and if they're profitable. And then I applied the model with the three lines. I think it was three lines, which you mentioned in an early podcast, saying, okay, if you're above this line, it's okay. Above line number one. If you're above line number two, you're getting money. Or you're a good guy, or your job is safe,
keep
whatever.
Your job.
It's all good. But if you're below line number one, you're gone. So you fire yourself. So everybody can look into the system and see if he's doing okay or not. And if not, we can talk about that. What's the reason why it's not working? And if there's no progress, they're gone. So that's
pretty simple.
Yeah, that's pretty simple. Or the other principle, should I fire the person or should I keep them? So this was a big, big problem. And Paul said, would you rehire the person? If yes, keep him, keep her. If no, fire. So And this was, I think, the hardest thing. So to fire somebody, it's pretty hard. And
it's the sucky part about owning a business.
Yeah, and to find a good way to do this. But that's a very important part to get rid of costs. And then, yeah, we work on the costs. We get the numbers pretty in time and all these things. So, but this was just improvement. And now I'm at the point where I'm working on getting the business completely independent from me. So I'm now trying out with the guy who will be CEO for me. Mm-hmm. So it took really long to find a good guy. And we did a new company for IT services, and he can just try. So I put the funding in it. He will get no salary. I will get no salary. We start from zero, no cost. We're getting clients, hopefully, making money. And if we're making money, we're adjusting the salary, so we're getting a little bit salary, and so we can grow the business from zero without monthly costs.
And that's an intriguing idea.
Yeah. So it works. We did this. We did the incorporation last week. So and now he's completely in the business. He's motivated. He feels
he's got
something.
Skin in the game.
Yeah, and he's a he will be a shareholder. So it's his business, and it's our common interest to develop the business. And then I can just relax and say, okay, do this.
Yeah.
It's yours. Do it.
So how is the IT business changing? I mean, with a lot more stuff delivered through the cloud, what are you seeing in Germany in terms of how the IT business is it changing? Is it still the same old break and fix setup networks? Everyone still needs a network, right?
Yeah.
Everything's on.
So so everybody's talking about the cloud and outsourcing, but they don't want to do it.
It's too new.
It's very conservative. So they want to see the servers. They want to have everything in their house, and they feel it's more secure. So the people are struggling, which want to do cloud computing. There are some areas where the people say where it's normal that they go cloud because it's not called cloud, like email servers. It's normal that email servers and web servers are in a data center. If you tell them, hey, your data, your email data, which is business critical, is in a data center, why is not your whatever CRM, your ERP system in the data center? Oh, no, that's too risky.
Yeah.
Like, well, I can understand that. All your emails, your contacts, everything is there.
Floating around.
No, it's they cannot
do this.
So
it's a little backwards.
Yeah, so I think it will take some time to do that, and it's some skills, but the IT business is still the old-fashioned way.
It's good. I mean, and the irony is, I mean, your clients may be different because you guys are good at security. But most people who have their data in-house, it's way less secure than
it is
in the cloud.
So, do you do data backup? Yeah, I think so. Okay, that's good. You have only one tape, and it's brand new for 5 years because I've never heard. Really? Okay. And we just had one automotive dealership. So, I think there's a problem with the server. Okay, it's in-house. Oh, you have two hard drives. Mm-hmm, okay, and you go there and clack, 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 clack. Okay, seems to be dead. And number two, it's going to die. You have a data backup, maybe. So it's from April. So, shit. And then you do all this data recovery. So it's not secure.
Well, it's like, do you keep your cash in a bank or do you keep it under your mattress?
Well, I was just telling this guy when I was just down at this conference in San Diego, and I was sitting next to a guy at the bar. Actually, it was funny because we got a hotel credit as part of this thing I went to, this President's Circle thing. So I had this money I had to spend.
Heck, man, I need to get that president.
I was running out of time. They give you basically this card that's got $250 on it. They say,
for drinks?
For whatever.
Holy
for
crap.
For whatever.
How do I get invited to this?
You just have to sell out of software.
There you go.
So rats, you know, I'm panicking because I'm down to the last day and I've got, $100 left on the card. And we're going out to an event. So I'm going to run down to the bar and buy some really expensive wine. Uh-huh. So I'm sitting next to this guy. And he's, I said, I'm in tech. What do you do? Just the conversation. And the guy sells to electrical utilities. And I said, oh, you might be really interested in this book I just read. It's called The Big Switch. Have you heard about this book? Mm-hmm. And it's called The Big Switch, and the subtitle is From Edison to Google. And it talks about the fact that computing is going through the same evolution that electrical power used to go through. And when electricity first came into being, it was just like computing, where companies generated their own power.
Yep.
There was no concept of utility
no
electricity, which most people don't really realize. I didn't realize. I mean, I knew there was a revolution, but I didn't realize the extent to which electricity was privately generated until the utilities came into being. And the exact same thing is happening in the
in the computing business right now, right? With Google.
Yeah.
And people are used to having their own servers, and everything's moving in that direction, but you have a lot of these holdouts that say, well, you know, I want to keep you know, generating my own electricity here. I don't want to...
I don't trust that grid.
It may
go back to that sooner or later, actually.
It might. Everything's
trust is money. They don't want to pay for it.
Yeah.
They think it's cheaper because you have to pay for electricity if you plug in your servers, and they don't count what it costs. And the people are... They are on the payroll. They don't cost anything. They're there. So.
Yeah, they're already working.
Yeah, so I can't lay them off.
Well, and the other interesting thing is utility computing is incredibly green. I mean, Salesforce.com, and the example I love is that they run 2 million customers on 500 servers. Mm-hmm. I mean, normally that would be 80,000 servers. Yeah. So think about the, you know, environmental implications of that. So there's sort of a tie-in to the...
How many servers does Google have?
Google has hundreds of thousands, but they use the cheapest... I went way off on a tangent here. But their model is really interesting that they use the cheapest possible... They build for failure, right?
Yeah, so mm-hmm. They
buy the cheapest possible components they have, and if you can picture in their data centers, they're just guys running around all day. They probably got hard drives in their tool belts, literally, right?
And just
they go around, something fails, it's like, you know, rack 10...
Yeah.
You know, row 20, you know, U2021 has failed, hard drive, boom, they just replace it. That's how they manage their infrastructure. It's amazing.
So they buy the cheapest?
They buy the cheapest hardware they can get their hands on. And they build for failure. And it's more economical
makes
for them
sense
to just replace
in a lot of ways.
Broken, cheap stuff than it is to use expensive stuff. All their servers are open. There's no lid to take off. Mm-hmm. It's just a motherboard sitting on a rack.
Down and dirty.
It's pretty cool. But their infrastructure is also incredibly redundant. I mean, I'm totally bought into Gmail mm-hmm. for corporate reasons. Do I lose any sleep? No, because I know that every message in my company is replicated across three.
Now, here's an interesting calendar question: how long does Gmail and the whatever's Google Calendar save your stuff? Is it for like
forever?
So you just keep building on, and you could have like 3 years back, and it'll save it all.
Yeah. I mean, I've got 10 years because we migrated from Exchange Server that had 10 years. So I've got 10 years.
So that's your tax accountant. Right?
There you go.
Because seriously, I was having all this paper here and I'm going, well, maybe I can, because you got all these paper records, right, of your meetings and all that kind of stuff. And you're going, well, I need that if I ever get audited. But Google has
it
all.
It can't hurt. It's not taking up a lot of room. You never know, right? Never say never. But they've got amazing redundancy, but who knows? They could have just a, you know, chain disaster and your data could go away. You know, very small percentage chance, but. Might as well have a backup.
I could have a fire in my house, it could all burn down, right?
There you go. And then Google's got your stuff.
Probably more likely than the Google.
Yeah, that's right. So we got onto the cloud from the concept of getting someone else to run your business.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And so far, so you're just starting in on this, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. So we're starting with a new company. So that's
kind of an interesting idea, creating a new company.
Yeah.
You know, instead of bringing them into the old one. Just starting a new one and saying, hey, this is your thing.
It's the only way to do it.
Yeah.
But it's the smart
thing. It's more motivation. If you're getting a company which is making money, or you don't have the pressure to make it successful. And the other way around, if the company's not making money, you don't want to be blamed for that.
Yeah, well, I think it's a great idea, but I think most people think when they're trying to get out of their company that, like, okay, I got to bring someone in to take over my company mm-hmm. instead of, like, well, I could just start a new thing and have them build it and funnel stuff over, and it's a completely separate option.
There's obviously much risk that way, too.
So I did the funding, and if the money's gone, it's gone.
Yeah.
And that's
it's a calculated
but
risk.
But it's limited. Yeah. So if you're putting someone in your company which is paying your bills, that's a really big risk.
Yeah.
And maybe it's not his failure, but I would blame him if he's killing the company. So this is some...
But I think that's where people go. It's like, it's, you know, well, I either got to bring in someone to run my company or nothing, you know, because I got to do it.
Yeah. And so, the other thing is, if first we plan to merge both companies. He has a company, I have a company put together. He's not making money.
Yeah.
He's just paying his salary. That's it. I was making some money last year. But the problem is, if you're merging these companies and you have to give away equity, blah, 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 and one part is not making money and the other part is making money, so he cannot get any equity.
Yeah.
Or you're paying him with the money you're making with your company for a salary.
Yeah.
Or the other thing we have
convoluted.
He is a guy working for him, and I don't want to get him in in my company because he's okay, but he's not good. So I say, you have to get rid of him. And he said, no, I can't. It's a friend, blah, blah, blah. I say, okay, do your stuff. I do my stuff. We do a new thing. We put our clients in, and we'll later, if everything is good, and we like each other after 6 months or so, and we lease the clients, I don't know if this is the right word, but we give the new company later the right to work for the clients of my company and his company, and the old company gets some commissions for that. If it's not working, we revoke the right, and everything is split, so we don't have to go to court and all.
So it's sort of like you're considering getting married, and you have a house,
and
your girlfriend has a house.
Yeah.
You say, well, let's rent an apartment together and see how it goes.
Yeah.
And then if it's great, you know, we'll get rid of the houses and get married. But if it isn't great, we'll go back to our own house and we're good.
Yeah. So that's a very secure way.
Yeah.
Maybe it's not burning your ships, but that's an easy way.
Well, we don't want to burn ships.
No, and the risk is limited, so. And it looks good so far, but we have started last week, so I don't
there
know.
There you go. Find out.
Yeah, so far so good.
No. So, yeah. So.
The first week was fantastic.
<I'm good.
laughs> Really? No problem.
No. So, but I know him for 6 months now, so we'll see. But yeah, and it's important. I cannot do everything. So, and it's good he's young. He's 25. I'm older. And it's a good combination.
35.
So you're getting more and more careful the older you are. And he has some really good ideas how to make money.
Well, he's probably got a lot of, you know, fire to get it going.
Yeah.
So that's good, because he's in Germany and he can run around and do all the things you don't want to do because you're over here
doing other things.
So, yeah.
Well,
you've sort of done that with Steve, too, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I mean, you're both in the same company. I mean, you've got your company. You can also use it in starting another venture altogether, right?
Yeah. Well, yeah, that's true.
So, you know, you've got me to funnel between you, but you've also got your own companies.
Yes. Yeah. So and that's good. So if not, we were dead.
And both companies keep dumping money into the media funnel fire. So it works good.
That's right. It's blazing.
It's blazing.
It's blazing.
Definitely. Yeah.
Well, that comes back to the thing where you're trying to limit your risk at the same time. I mean, there is the philosophy, you know, the all in theory,
right?
And burn the ships, and then you could die and sink. On the other hand, does that make your business more likely to succeed or not?
I never know. I don't think so. Because if you're young and you have if you can live at home and everything is good, it's okay. So you can be desperate. So this is how I started. But if you have to pay for your living, and if you have too much pressure, you don't do the right decisions.
Yeah, it's true.
And that's too risky. And then you have to make money. You have to get greedy. And that's too, and you have not the luxury to say no. You have to do everything, and this was the situation I was in. So that's a pretty bad thing.
And you can see this in companies that you work with over the years, that they start off and they've got their funding and they've got deep pockets and everyone's happy and they're partying, and all of a sudden the funding's running dry, and then everyone gets really ugly, right?
Yeah,
the whole environment.
Well, it's her fault. It's his fault.
Yeah, people are pointing fingers. The sales are getting, you know, the salesmanship's getting a little bit less kind of
ethical.
Ethical, yeah. So it's interesting to see that evolution happen.
So the ideal job is to just be the guy who's like the CEO, and you first get funding and then you just jump from funded ship to funded ship.
Actually, I decided the best, the least pressure job in the world, and I have no evidence to support this, it's just a thought that hit me, is marketing, right? Because marketing people can go out there and they can just try all this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And they come back and they report that we did all this stuff. And the CEO said, well, what did it do for us? Oh, I don't know, but we did all this stuff.
Yeah.
And marketers are probably the most laid-back people I know in corporate
just
America.
Just like Super Bowl commercials. It's like,
yeah, you know,
there was some terrible
few
ones.
Mil,
somebody got paid
a bunch
of money for that, right?
We got the word out there.
You're a banker. That's the same. I watched the movie Wall Street, the new one.
The new one, yeah.
And what's going on there? They're so greedy, the guys, and they're completely crazy. And they told, yeah, we built this out and this out. And I think there's much truth in that.
Yes.
So you're,
I think, you know, finance, that is like the golden word. If you are somehow involved in that, you are just a zillionaire for, like, and I don't know how it all works, but, like, You know, like, all our contractors, they're like, oh, he works downtown in San Francisco. He's in finance. Yeah. Nobody knows what these people do, but it's just like they all have...
You know what I'll tell you what they do. They move money around.
Yeah.
And you make a lot of money moving... I know a lot of people that make a lot of money moving a lot of money around. And they own big houses.
It's just like...
And they own really fast motorcycles.
Yeah.
And they take great vacations.
Oh,
and
there it goes.
And they move lots of money around.
But I don't think this will last forever.
No,
I think it will change. Well, so this couldn't work.
And I wonder if, you know, one of the quotes in Wall Street, the movie, and I don't know how true it is, and JC was getting me to talk about this.
Yeah,
is
he's preaching it's factual. And it's
well, I'm saying, I don't know if it's factual, but it sounded like very plausible, was that 40% of the profit, the actual profit made in this country, and I think it was last year or a couple years ago, was from financial services.
Yep,
sure. Which is non-productive, right? If you look at an economy is based on production of goods, generally speaking, right? And services are needed, but you can't have an entirely service-based economy.
Yeah.
And if most of the money is being made on in the service sector, you don't have a real economy.
Yeah.
And it's not going to last. What you have is not going to last very long.
It ain't
I think that's true, that 40% of the money is made in financial services. I believe it's possible.
I think it was more, sure.
Because if you count insurance business and all the other businesses, that's huge.
Yeah,
and they didn't do anything except move some stuff around. They didn't sell anything. They didn't make anything.
In tech, even though we're dealing with bits and bytes, at least we have this holier-than-thou attitude. Well, at least we're creating something, right?
Mm-hmm.
Whereas, you know, you look at the financial service sector, and there are legitimate components to that. There's legitimate financing. There's taking risk on startup business. But a lot of it's not really doing a lot for the general good.
No.
Yeah.
Or just... It's I have watched this in German, but it's called empty sale. So you're selling what you don't have for a specific price, and if you have to give it away, you have to buy the stock.
Yeah.
So I don't know the term for that, but
you
cannot sell something which you don't own, which you don't have.
But it happens all the time.
Yeah, this could.
Yeah,
work.
And the brightest people in the world. You know, what do the smartest people in this great democracy do? They go to where the most money is. Where's the most money? The financial sector. So there's also a brain drain. You know, a lot of people don't talk about that, but there's really a brain drain because the people who used to be physicists, well, guess what? They're now financial engineers.
That's true. Well, it definitely pays better, right?
Sure.
And what do they call it? It's that it's not debentures. I keep forgetting the name. The thing that sort of caused the financial crisis. Derivatives.
Derivatives. Yeah.
And derivatives are where. There's no rules. You can move money around. There's under $650 trillion or something derivative, some insane number. And it's not backed up by anything, but some, as you said, selling stuff you think you can get to somebody. I mean, you don't have anything. It's you have the idea of something. Like the mortgages. Okay, we're going to sell, you know, these $3 billion of mortgages, and we're going to leverage it to three people because somebody will eventually take it. But they sell the same mortgages to block of mortgages to three different, it's insane, to three different people. And I guess that can't last forever. We'll find out.
We'll see.
Stay tuned. Stay tuned for the next Great Depression. Yes, true. You will be there.
Another shoe will drop.
That's right.
It's going to be within a couple of years.
That's true. Okay. Good night.
Good night. Bye.
And there it is, another episode of Business Success Tips. Thanks as always for joining us. You can check out our website online at businesssuccesstips.org. Send us an email at friends@businesssuccesstips.org. Or if you're a Twitter stalker, find us at twitter.com/BST podcast. Thanks. We'll see you next time.
Find more great shows like this on personallifemedia.com.
Hey, this is Sean Daly, host of Green Talk Radio. Green Talk helps you navigate the maze of green and eco products on the market today and make smarter lifestyle choices at home and at work through informative and entertaining interviews with industry authors and experts, as well as executives from innovative companies around the world. Find Green Talk Radio on iTunes or at personallifemedia.com. Green Talk Radio, environmental stewardship through smart consumption.